Hospitality in Action. TGIF. I invited four businessmen over for dinner on a Friday night after their workday. I wasn't quite sure what to expect because I don't usually associate with businessmen on a personal level. I've never held a white-collar job. Apparently, most white-collar jobs require some sort of schooling, and to me, the only thing more dull than a white-collar job is schooling. This is not to say that I do not respect people who work 9-to-5, Monday through Friday. I appreciate their dedication to regimen. For me, I tend to work around my random spurts of energy. The theme for the party was nautical, because growing up, we always had fish on Friday. For my door decoration, I put up a tissue paper lobster that had a small sign attached to it that said, "Pinch me, it's TGIF." I used a tablecloth printed with ship's wheels and anchors. My dinner napkins had a sailing theme, and I made a matching apron to match. For my centerpiece, I displayed a conch shell in a beach hat. I used clam shells to hold peanuts, and I put sand in the ashtrays. I also placed a tip jar on the table, but they all stiffed me. Everyone knows seamen and businessmen don't tip. Because my knowledge of boats and shipping is limited, I included pirate references. I even considered wearing an eye patch, but limiting my vision while frying flounder felt unnecessarily risky. So instead, I wore a hook hand. I also thought it would be fun to introduce my white-collar guests to the world of blue-collar. I fashioned a small corner of my kitchen into a break room, thinking that if my businessmen needed to get away from the party for a moment, they would have somewhere to go. I put a large crab ashtray, indicating cancer, on a stool so they would have a designated smoking area. On the wall, I hung a time clock so each of my guests could punch in and out to play blue collar. My menu was simple. It included Captain Stack's fried flounder or broiled Seaman's red snapper, Skipper's Dock romaine salad, and Neptune's hush puppies, with a peer pressure choice of baked potato, French fries, or rice, and a monkey dish of coleslaw of the dune served on the side. Sidebar. Possible origins of the term monkey dish. A small dish no bigger than a monkey's paw. A small dish that would serve monkey. Originally a dish made from a monkey's skull. I also made my captain's mouth-watering bite-sized blue ball cheese balls. Blue balls are bite-sized cheese balls made out of blue cheese. For dessert, I made it to the bakery and bought a Beachcomber's lemon meringue pie. I also readied my liquor cabinet. Because from what I learned watching old soap operas, your average businessman likes to unwind. Around 6 o'clock, they arrived in time for happy hour. I made a runner out of plywood so when they walked into the room, their feet would make the same sound you might hear walking down a wooden dock on your way to a boathouse fish shanty. After a quick ahoy, I escorted them into the living room and offered them a drink, which they eagerly accepted. Initially, the party seemed stiff, mostly standing around in small chatter on such mind-numbing subjects as the Teasdale account and the Neves memo. From the kitchen, I heard the topic change to dimples, and I rushed in thinking I could finally contribute to the conversation, only to find out that they were talking about some new golf ball. I quickly excused myself, but soon came rushing back in when I heard the words panhead, only to find out they were still talking about a golf ball. After 5 salty dogs, my business mateys began to loosen up. Coats were shed, ties were loosened, and from what I could make up from the kitchen, suggestive comments were tossed off into my direction. I rushed in a third time and, to my surprise, discovered the saucy banter was aimed at my next-door neighbor and delivered from my window. Well, shiver me timbers. By the time I served the fish, the party had already set sail with a clear but uncharted course for inebriation. The evening was beginning to flounder. I tried to avoid getting crabby, and I realized I needed to do something quick before the tide completely turned. I cheerfully suggested a party game, charades, but from their mostly mumbled responses, it was clear not only that they were not keen on guessing the titles to movies by acting them out, but that I had a full mutiny on my hands. My only recourse was to run this shipwreck aground, so thinking fast, I sent them on a treasure hunt towards my neighbor's booty. They bought that hook, line, and sinker and set sail, all men overboard. And now for one of my self-award-winning recipes. And remember, I'm only going to say this one time. You can find other jackpot recipes just like this on the bonus material CD. Captain's Mouth-Watering Bite-Sized Blue Ball Cheese Balls. 1 cup of grated cheddar cheese, 4 ounces of cream cheese, 2 ounces of crumbled blue cheese, 2 tablespoons of butter, 1 tablespoon of chopped green onions, optional, 1/2 teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce, 1 tablespoon of white wine or milk, 1/4 cup of chopped walnuts, Ritz crackers. Bring all cheeses to room temperature, beat with mixer. Add butter, onions, optional, Worcestershire sauce, and milk or wine and continue beating. Chill overnight. Shape mixture into tumor-sized balls, roll in chopped nuts. Let stand 15 minutes, spread on a Ritz. The information tank. 2 fish hook incidents. 1. My friend's mother saw her cat swallow a fish hook in the shed. Rather than see the cat suffer, she shot it in the back of the head with a gun. 2. My sister had a fish hook hanging in her shower. She slipped and the hook went through her lip. The only good thing is that it plumped up her thin lips for a while. Optional menu suggestion for TGIF. Steak with red wine butter sauce. Julius Caesar salad. Gloria's peas and onions. Baked potato all the way. Cousin Kathy's cheesecake. Coffee. A great tool to use for steak night is a stovetop grill, which fits snugly over 2 burners. I can fit up to 8 slipper-sized steaks on it or 2 porterhouse steaks. What I like about using the grill is that it makes you feel like a line cook, especially when all your guests request steaks at different temperatures. I find that I can judge people by the temperature of their steak. I serve my steaks with a red wine butter sauce and a steak temperature poke. Buy steaks that include a bone. Bones are good items to sell at the end of the night to dog owners. And now for one of my self-award winning recipes. Red wine steak butter sauce. My mother got this recipe out of a Playboy magazine. She made it whenever we had a roast beef or steaks. Usually it was made late, so I always saw a small saucepan in the freezer chilling to speed along the hardening of the butter. Remove skin of 3 shallots. Chop fine. Toss in a small saucepan with 2 tablespoons of butter. Simmer until tanned. Add 1/2 cup of dry red wine. Continue cooking until the wine is reduced to 1/4 cup. Place saucepan in refrigerator to cool off. Mix 1 stick of soft butter into the mixture and blend well. Spoon on roast beef or steaks. Blind date. I like having a first date in my home. I feel more comfortable when I can control the evening. The goal is to impress him, and this is easier for me when he is on my turf. I can put my skills to work. I can cast a spell. I don't like a lot of small talk, so I allow my home and homemaking abilities to speak for me. I'm guessing a stranger can get a pretty good idea as to who I am by observing the medical wax model of a canker sore I have hanging on the wall, or my antique correction shoe displayed on a bookshelf, or the fact that my place is organized primarily to accommodate my rabbit. First dates often have an air of illusion swirling around them, because typically on a first date, people don't know much about each other, so they tend to reinvent themselves for the occasion, as well as project onto the other what qualities they desire most in a mate. Many times, it's not until well after you've said, "I do," that the fantasy fades and it becomes up to your lawyer to help you settle the custody for the leather Dale Earnhardt jacket. Many first dates take place in restaurants, but restaurants make me anxious. Waiting in line for a table, the lighting, figuring out the menu, and the general hubbub always makes me wish I was at home cooking. I like working in restaurants, not dining in them. I especially enjoyed waiting on couples that were having a first date. What a treat to observe the two sitting there, soaking in that awkward silence, then fumbling for something interesting to say, and all the half smiles and clumsy nodding without having to experience that nervous knot in my stomach. That is great entertainment. Having a first date at home allows you plenty of busy work. When things get uncomfortable, one can always torch the baked Alaska or malletize the meat. It's also a great opportunity to show off your abilities. Imagine having a first date with someone from Argentina. You need to think, how can I make this magical? You want him to like the food, like your home, and like you. Maybe to make him feel more relaxed and at home, you could impress him by preparing authentic foods from his homeland. But if you are not familiar with Argentinian cuisine, you are actually showing him what you don't know. It's not a good idea to use the event of a first date to make something you have never made before. If you are set on trying something new, rehearse it first on somebody you would never date, like your ex-husband or former fiancé. To relieve yourself of much pressure and stress for the evening, you could always decide to take a first date to a part of the world you're more familiar with. And in my case, I would take him to Greece. It's the only authentic ethnic food I have a handle on. So I like to assume everybody is Greek, whether they are Argentinian, Spanish, or French. If there are two things I know for sure, it's that animals love snacks and boys eat a lot. So when I'm cooking for two, I cook for four. This way, I'm covered. And if there are leftovers, I can send him home with a package that will remind him of me the next morning. Of course, having a first date in your home can be risky. If it's not going well, you're stuck. I once agreed to have a first date over for dinner and then found out I had to work that day. I pressed my pantsuit, got my apartment spick and span, and decided on a meal I felt confident I could prepare in an hour. A porterhouse steak, mashed potatoes, salad, and watermelon wedges for dessert. I also planned on serving sangria because I had a pile of fruit that was beginning to turn. I put out some unshelled walnuts in a bowl to complement the sangria. When I got home from work, I immediately boiled water for the potatoes, turned on the broiler, and threw my steak in. I only had an hour, but because I had pre-planned well, I knew I would make it just under the deadline. Unfortunately, my date showed up 15 minutes early, empty-handed, and with a friend that wasn't invited. They had stopped for a slice of pizza on the way over, so they said they didn't want to eat until all that cheese had settled. My date then turned on the television so he could catch the last few minutes of the Hornets game. He and his buddy drank multiple glasses of sangria, ate fistfuls of caramels, and emptied my nut bowl as those last few minutes dragged on for more than an hour and a half. By the time dinner was on the table, the sangria was gone, the potatoes were cold, the salad was limp, and my steak was not only exhausted, it was humiliated. When we got around to dessert, he insisted on carving the watermelon, but dropped it on the floor. Too drunk to hail a cab, he sent his friend home, fell asleep on my bed, and woke up in his own vomit. We dated for 2 years. Sidebar. Blind date conversational suggestions. Don't ask hard questions or questions that involve a lot of thinking, such as, does the sun make noise? Do you tip a cobbler? How do you teach hope? When can we see each other again? Don't assume things. Where did you go to high school? Maybe he didn't. What does your father do? Maybe he was murdered. Who did you vote for? Don't assume he's allowed to. What do you think of my hospitality book? Don't assume he can read. Other don'ts. Don't tell everything about yourself. Save it for your gynecologist. Don't cry. If you are drunk, don't call him after he leaves. Don't dress too young. Don't act too self-sufficient. You'll drive him away. Don't answer the door in a wedding dress and veil. He might not think you're joking. Be ready when your date arrives. Don't pick that time to hop in the shower. Don't be a jabberjaw. You learn more by listening than by talking. However, if your date is a poor storyteller, it's best to sit there silent. Remember, shower perks you up, bath relaxes you. Digestion starts in the mouth. The stain box. How to remove vomit stains. Get off as much as you can. Soak stain in detergent, an enzyme, and run it through some warm water. When you put it in the washing machine, use some bleach or just toss it. chances are you've stained it before. My menu for blind date: Stavros's tzatziki sauce with pita scoops, Tula's country-style Greek salad, chicken of the taverns, mixed Greek olives, Panos Manosakis galata burrito, milk pie. Gift idea for ex if you are still on speaking terms. If you have a lot of photographs of your ex and feel bad about cutting them up and throwing them away, take the pictures and make a self-esteem collage with them and give it to the person on their next birthday disguised as a card. If it's a good picture of them, they certainly would want it back anyway. Extra, extra! In Greece, umbilical cords are saved from baby boys and frozen. When someone gets pregnant, fresh bread is baked using the cord and fed to the pregnant woman in hopes that she will have a baby boy, because girls don't count. And now for one of my self-award-winning recipes. Roasted potatoes in their jackets. Use as many small red or creamer potatoes as you wish. Olive oil, sea salt. Put olive oil in a roasting pan and add plenty of coarse sea salt. Add potatoes, whole, and bake at 400 degrees for 45 minutes. Shake the pan once in a while so the salt will coat the potatoes. You can add any herbs you want to. These are good served at room temperature or cold the next day. A rich uncle comes to visit. Entertainingly speaking, nothing is more taxing than having an unexpected guest drop by, or an out-of-town guest looking for a place to stay. But occasionally, there can be a circumstance where you are actually motivated to be hospitable to this type of special needs person. The circumstance sometimes comes in the form of a rich uncle. One might wonder why some guests are more important to impress than others. Well, officially, all guests should be treated the same. But let's say a rich uncle does come to visit. This might be a perfect opportunity to see how much you can class up your act. Make a game of it. Make it your goal to impress your rich uncle to the point where his heart is so filled with unbridled gratitude that he will kick up his heels and perhaps bump up your take of his fortune when he adjusts his will. Even if by most standards you live modestly, there are plenty of simple touches you can do that will make even the most jaded rich uncle think twice about your inheritance. One afternoon, I was graced by a surprise visit from my rich uncle. Not having seen him in years, I initially mistook him for a confused old dandy, so I showered him with insults and was getting geared up for the door slam when he informed me that he was my rich uncle from upstate. I turned on a dime and immediately ushered him in, making light of the many colorful quips I made earlier, such as, "Why don't you try the train station? That's where most old fags prey on young boys." I think this turned out to be a pretty good icebreaker. After I took his cane, along with his cap and cape, he informed me that he had some banking business in town and he had hoped to stay the night. I couldn't have been more enthused. I quickly made him comfortable on the couch, offered him a cocktail, and told him I had a few preparations to make. I tossed on my old apron, the one with all the holes in it, because it is comfortable. I joked with my rich uncle that even if I did have money to buy a new apron, I might decide to keep this old tattered one anyway, just for sentimental reasons. In the bedroom, I rotated the mattress so it felt brand new and firm. I provided a rack for his suitcase and cleared the closet for a place to hang his cape. I made sure there was an extra blanket. I set a collection of short stories that I put together myself on a small table next to the bed. I also placed a good reading lamp, an alarm clock, and a tea bell on the table. After refreshing my rich uncle's cocktail, I told him I had a few more preparations to make in the bedroom. When he suggested that he sleep on the couch, I insisted he sleep in the bedroom. I apologized for not having a bigger apartment and added that because rents are so expensive in the city, this working girl will just have to make do. I smiled and headed back into the bedroom with a number of items to place by the bed. A bowl of plastic fruit, fresh water, a bottle of aspirin, hand cream, a writing tablet, a pen, paper, envelopes, and stamps. Since my room doesn't have a window, I put up a picture of a window and then added drapes. After he fell asleep, I sprinkled a trail of glitter from the window to his bed, so when he awoke, he could imagine a fairy had come to visit him while he was sleeping. I also gathered some bricks and stones from the basement that I could heat in the oven and place around his pillow to keep his head warm. I placed a pair of his underpants on the radiator so they would be nice and toasty after his morning bath. I quickly grabbed an old pair of pantyhose and fashioned a bath sachet, and I filled the other leg with a bag of lima beans to make an eye burrito, which I put in the freezer until well chilled for him to place on his eyes or neck as a soothing compress. As I planned the menu for dinner, my rich uncle commented on the broom straw I had just placed through my earring holes. I mentioned that this was a good way to keep the holes from closing until I could scrape up enough money to buy some store-bought earrings, or if that proved too difficult, I could collect some returnable bottles and, with the change, purchase some string that I could use to replace the straw. The next morning after my rich uncle left, I was quite surprised to find in the donation can I had absentmindedly left on the side of his bed a check made out to me. A good host provides warmth and comfort without expecting anything in return, but occasionally our sincere and honorable actions are rewarded, though not always in the amount that we had hoped and are certain a rich uncle can afford. The stain box. How to remove wine stains. You don't. Boil your garment in a pot of hot chopped beets and water. First class suggestions fit for a king. Put the cake plates in the freezer to serve dessert or salad on. Chill your beer mugs and martini glasses. Nothing is better than a frosty mug or glass. Heat your dinner plates in the oven, or if you have a dishwasher, run them through the dry cycle. The dishwasher is also a good place to steam fish by putting it in foil and having the dishwasher steam it for you. The unexpected guest. Unfortunately, not all unexpected guests are rich uncles, but fortunately, I have a doorman so I can pretend I'm not at home. I seldom answer my phone anyway because I can't hear it. The volume is turned down. Either way, I am prepared. But if my defenses fail and the unexpected guest does slip through, I accept the inconvenience and act as hospitable as possible. I make a point never to apologize for being caught unprepared, for they're the ones who busted in on me. The unexpected guest comes in many forms, sizes, and shapes. It could be a fair weather friend, a former teacher, a police officer, or a priest. You could get a call from someone at the bus station looking to kill a couple hours, or they could just happen to be in the lobby or neighborhood. Maybe they grew up in your home before you lived there and want to reminisce. Perhaps it's a Girl Scout selling cookies or an escaped convict on the run. Maybe social services has dropped by and it's important to play a gracious host while concealing what they are so desperate to find. Whatever the situation, this is where your hospitality is put to the test. Because I live in a small apartment, I can't stock a lot of food due to the lack of space, not to mention cockroaches, mice, and the occasional rat. But I do try to be prepared the best I can when unexpected guests arrive by having a few basic things in the fridge that I can whip into something for drive-bys or munchies. Canned goods are a safe bet. I always have a couple of jars of stuffed grape leaves or a can of peanuts. I have spaghetti, butter, and of course lots of greens because that's all my rabbit eats. Things that can be thrown together in 15 minutes, as well as plenty of cupcakes and cheese balls because of my business. Growing up, my neighbors always had a frozen cake in their coffin-like freezer in the basement for an unexpected guest, because it thaws out fast. I also know someone who kept pineapple-flavored ice cubes somewhere in the house to add to a drink to make it special. An unexpected guest means you have to be quick on your feet and adapt to any situation. If someone brings their 2-year-old to my home, I have to immediately hide my reaction and quickly think about what might be at their eye level, like knives, lighters, or candles. If the unexpected guest is pressuring you to allow them to crash on your futon for the night, be prepared to pull out one of those excuses you've been saving in the back pocket, like, I'd love to have you stay, but they're fumigating for rats, or I found a spider sack. Feel free to turn the tables on an unexpected guest. If you are a single girl, an old person, or someone who is injured, sick, or obese, take advantage of having an extra set of hands. Have them put a shelf up, set clocks back, remove a mouse from a mousetrap, rotate a mattress, or snake a drain. If you're the unexpected guest doing the visiting, be considerate and appear with something heavy that is a pain in the ass to haul up 6 flights of stairs, such as fireplace logs, kitty litter, charcoal, bottled water, or birdseed. I find my timer to be a great tool when it comes to unexpected visitors because it keeps track of the time so you don't have to. I bring one with me when I drop in on people. Unfortunately, the one thing you can expect with most unexpected guests is that you are not expected anywhere. So when the unexpected guest doesn't know when to leave, expect to educate them. I recently had a gay friend drop by unannounced. This is always a high-alert situation. If you don't act quickly, he may become a permanent fixture. You can always lie, make up a story, such as, "Don't mind me, the doctor said the best thing for my yeast infection was to expose my vagina to the air." Or, "Oh, I'm so glad you're here. You can help me pick out the best photos of my vagina from the contact sheets." Or, "You can't stay. It's March Madness," or whatever month madness it is when they drop in. This is a sports-related reference and will work well in all but the Nelliest Little Queen. Or, "If you stay, you can help me babysit the babies in the back room. I'll go get them." Homosexuals are easy to fool because they have such great imaginations. Try to avoid allowing them to get high or drunk. This will really cloud his sense of time. If he does insist on drinking, this is your chance to empty your stash of weird liquors. Gay men will drink anything alcoholic because most of them feel a great need to escape, but pour heavy because he's not leaving until all those bottles are empty. Never ask for advice, such as his opinion on beige versus tan. He will go on for hours. As a last recourse, yawn a lot, especially when he's speaking. Hopefully, he'll get tired of hearing you say, "I'm sorry, what was that?" The out-of-town guest. As an unexpected guest, you present quite a challenge to your gracious host, but nothing nearly as crippling as the out-of-town guest. When the unexpected guest hijacks a host's valuable time, it's only for hours, while an out-of-town guest can be around for days, even weeks. So, if you are an out-of-town guest, be classy and find somewhere else to stay. If you're not classy, or you're a family member, here are a few suggestions on how to be a tolerable out-of-town guest. Make it clear to your host exactly how long you will be staying. This allows them to see light at the end of the tunnel. Never arrive uninvited, like an earthquake, with a lame excuse. Nobody likes a shocker. Try to be in good spirits. You've already burdened your host with your stay. Don't add insult to injury by expressing your disappointment about not getting better tickets to No No Nanette or The Drowsy Chaperone on Off-Broadway. Don't arrive saying you have chiggers, scabies, ringworm, or lice. Keep your parasites to yourself. Make sure you have a game plan for your trip so your host doesn't have to play events coordinator. The last thing your host wants to hear from you is, "So, what's shaking for today?" Bring two books to read or one to write. Don't bring a gift like flavored coffee or a personalized mug unless you know for sure that's what your host is into. Or even worse, don't show up empty-handed. If you don't know your host's taste, bring a little something like a bottle of wine or stamps. Then, be a good detective while you're there. Scope something out that would be more appropriate for her, like a new pair of dishwashing gloves, coffee filters, a romance novel, a carton of cigarettes, or better yet, how about replacing that bottle of Tia Maria you emptied? You could always send them a gift after you've left, along with your thank you check. Don't show up with a pet you need to bury. Pack lightly when you're visiting. Nothing can scare a host more than matching luggage and a hatbox. Never put down your host's town or compare it to where you were from. Keep your belongings together and not scattered about. This applies double in the bathroom. Bring a DOP kit. If you are sleeping on the couch, fold your bedding and put it away before you get up, and don't oversleep. Don't make extra work for your host. Clean up after yourself. If you drop change on the floor or see packing peanuts, pick them up. Don't expect to be waited on. Don't steal anything and stay out of the medicine chest. Be respectful of furniture and other belongings. Don't put your luggage on the table afraid that the rabbit might chew on the identification tag or sit on the couch and pour iodine on an open sore. If you break something, replace it. I once had a friend over who broke a plate and he was gay enough to realize that the plate he broke was a Russell Wright. The next day, I received 8 of them. If you take a nap, leave your clothes on. Don't get naked and get under the covers. Naps involve clothing. Don't invite other people over. Answer the phone or door or adjust the temperature. Don't turn on the TV or hi-fi without asking. Don't give your host's number out so you can receive personal calls, especially if it's a drug connection. Always pay for any calls that you make. When given choices, make a decision, breast or thigh, can or bottle, Parcheesi or Chinese Checkers, Grand Central Station or JFK, pick one. Let your host know any dietary restrictions. Are you fatally allergic to root vegetables or only eating purple foods this month? Offer to help with household chores such as setting the table, raking leaves, washing windows, painting baseboards, or digging a grave. If you do smoke cigarettes or marijuana, or you drink a lot of beer, then bring it with you. Don't suck the hostess dry and then just leave. I went to a wedding on a boat once, and my date was a smoker and didn't even bring any cigarettes. He mooched off other people all night long on a 4-hour boat ride. He should have bought 3 packs just so people could mooch off him. Don't flirt with a boyfriend or husband. Don't leave anything behind. Nothing's worse than your host having to mail your forgotten golf umbrella. Don't dye your hair while you're there. My mother always said, don't bother other people. I think that's good advice. Other preparations for an out-of-town guest. Regardless of the situation an out-of-town guest presents, it's important to rise to the occasion and be the best host that you can be. Here are a few ways to make your out-of-towners' stay as painless and pleasant as possible. Offer them a ride to the airport. Ask if your guest needs anything, like an iron, hangers, or a razor. Always have spares. Never, under any circumstances, leave a guest alone in your apartment, especially if you have something to hide. They will find it because they are looking for it. Take into consideration how they traveled to get to you. Are they jet-lagged, fresh off the boat, or cramped from an 18-hour bus ride? Always act interested in their small-town stories, even if you aren't. Don't assume that your stories are any more interesting than theirs. You should let your guests know ahead of time if you've planned a certain activity, so they have enough time to psych themselves up or to pack the proper tranquilizer if it is something that they loathe to do. Don't plan every minute of your guest's stay. They might have planned their own trip or simply not want to plan at all. If you want to splurge, show them one of your money jars and tell them, hey, this is what we have to blow. Or better yet, ask them to contribute to it before they leave. If you know what your guest likes, stock a few of their favorite food items or drinks. And if this particular guest comes to visit often, consider having something monogrammed for them, such as towels or branding iron for steaks, triple initials, Jocelyn Ellen Wordis. Plan a menu that will provide you with multiple meals such as ham, turkey, or meatloaf, or plenty of cold cuts. This way your guest can make himself sandwiches or a late-night snack. Do-ahead dishes are great for weekend stays. Have some busy work you can do together while sitting around catching up, like frosting cupcakes, snapping beans, shucking corn, squeezing limes, or shelling walnuts. Good, mindless things make it easy to carry on a conversation. Avoid counting change, reading, playing solitaire, or listening to music with headphones. These activities don't leave you open for conversation. If you have a lot of errands to run, invite your guest along. It's a great time to talk, and it's a great way for them to sightsee. A good trick is to fill your medicine cabinet with marbles. Nothing announces a noisy guest better than an avalanche of marbles hitting a porcelain sink. Plus, you'll know which guest is a junkie whore or gutter hype, and you'll know what else to hide. Count your stash or remove the labels from your prescription bottles. Here is a sample of a perfect invitation for an out-of-town guest. Dear Ruth, I am so pleased that you'll be staying with me this weekend. I thought after I picked you up in Burnsville, we could go for a long hike on the beach before we go to Kemp's Seafood House for dinner. It's all-you-can-eat night. After church, on Sunday, we could stop by the country club for hot dogs at the 19th hole. And then maybe we can take in a round of golf. Don't forget your clubs. We might have some time to go to the annual Tanglewood Horse Show or make the Midnight Madness sale at the Knightdale Mall, just around the corner from Sparkle's parking lot. P.S. Can you remember to pack that orange platter you borrowed? Bill Leslie's boyfriend has been asking about it. Thanks so much. See you soon, Dorothy. P.S.S. I hope you're off that fast. This invitation tells you exactly what to pack. Gift suggestions for a hostess from an out-of-town guest. Books. flowers or plants depending on yard, tree identification tags, ashtray, hairbrush, umbrella, stationery for guest room, personalized matches, expensive candle, something that can be used up or consumed like olive oil, nuts, soap, butter, wine, weed, liquor, paper napkins, hangers, catnip, carrot tops, crab meat, fancy mustard, dog bones, salami, saffron, chocolates, good coffee, peppercorns, candy, stamps, fireplace logs, hand cream. Breakfast for sleepy hollowheads. There is an old saying that goes, eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a citizen, and dinner like a beggar. I don't live by that, but I like repeating it. For me, I prefer, eat breakfast like a peasant on a hunger strike, lunch like a serf with gastroenteritis, and dinner like a jester who has just raided the pantry when the king's away. In other words, I don't eat breakfast. Lunch weighs me down, and dinner never ends. Of course, this lifestyle probably explains my problem areas. Although I don't eat breakfast, I do sometimes contribute to the breakfast table on special occasions. I like to make coffee cake. Coffee cake is also an appropriate dish to give a person when they have lost someone special or when you want to bring a tasty treat to a morning meeting. I make this cake every Christmas morning. The recipe is based on a recipe from an old Sunset cookbook my mother had that I can't find. And now for one of my self-award-winning recipes. Cinnamon sour cream coffee cake. You will be placing this cake in a cold oven. Then you will be setting the oven to 350 degrees and baking the coffee cake for 55 minutes. You will need a 9-inch greased tube pan. Beat until light and fluffy, 2 sticks of unsalted butter, 1 1/4 cups of sugar, 2 eggs. You're going to blend in 1 cup of sour cream, 2 cups of sifted flour, 1/2 teaspoon of baking soda, 1 1/2 teaspoons of baking powder. You're going to add this to your butter mixture. Add 2 teaspoons of pure vanilla extract. Blend well. Spoon 1/2 the mixture into the tube pan. This batter will be very thick. Sprinkle 1/2 the nut mixture, which I'll tell you in a minute, over the batter. Then spoon the rest of this thick batter on top of that and top with remaining nut mixture. Now, for the nut mixture, I use a small hand nut grinder. I grind 1 cup of finely chopped walnut meats and mix with 1 1/4 teaspoons of cinnamon and 2 tablespoons of sugar. Lumberjack lunch. No one appreciates a hot, hearty lunch quite like a lumberjack. These brawny, bearded men definitely know how to work up an appetite. What with their log rolling, vertical chopping, and sawing, it's no wonder they grab for seconds. Most of the lumberjacks I know have a simple palate. They tend to like their whole meal on one plate or in a single bowl, which is why I'll be making stew. Lumberjacks are no nonsense. I never serve appetizers to my lumberjacks. They don't like cocktails and they don't like cordials. They're not big on nuts. Perhaps it's all the squirrels they come in contact with on the job. Or it could be unshelled nuts are just not worth a lumberjack's effort. Lumberjacks have a one-track mind. Like a brown bear fresh from hibernation, they can become confused and easily agitated when not fed quickly. It's important not to dilly-dally in the presence of a lumberjack. The last thing a lumberjack wants to hear on a lunch break is, "Why don't you relax while I prepare you some lunch?" A lumberjack is a working man, and his time is limited. It's fine to serve a lumberjack food on plastic dishware, and you should always permit them to use bread as a utensil. As a general rule, allow a lumberjack to dine alone. Treat them like fireworks. Light fuse and back away. Serve them large portions quickly, and then swiftly retreat to a safe place until the gorging has ended. Don't question a lumberjack, and never look one in the eye. Be polite when suggesting they remove their cleats, but be prepared if they don't. I always have a clear path to the table and another to the bathroom. Feeding lumberjacks can be very rewarding when you take care to follow all the necessary precautions. Lumberjack Prayer by Sven Halvorsen. Bless us, O Lord, for logs we chop, logs we roll and trees we drop. We swing our axe until we stop, for rolls with butter and pork of chop. We'll chow until the forest beckons, a hearty stew of potatoes and bacons. Oh, Lord, one thing we reckons, enough with the chatter, how about seconds? The Stain Box. Mud Stain Removal. Make sure that the mud stain on the rug has dried. Vacuum the dirt off. Take some laundry soap and work it into the stain. This should work. If not, just turn the rug over and deny it ever happened. Gift ideas for lumberjacks. Underpants. Harmonica and neck supporter. Axe guard. Socks. Insect repellent. Sandwich meat. A guide on poisonous plants. Tweezers for splinters. Tea tree oil shampoo. Book of haunted stories. White jeans. Wood grain lighter. Toilet paper caddy. Sit upon. Compass. Buck knife. Paper cutter. Out to brunch. I don't like brunch. Brunch is a combination of breakfast and lunch. I could never date somebody who was into brunch. That's a deal breaker. I don't like the ceremony attached to brunch. Brunch requires me to gather in the early afternoon or late morning with other people so we can talk while we eat a big meal, and then when it's over, what? I'm stuffed. I'm talked out. I'm tired and lazy, as if all my bones left my body, and it's not even 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I like looking forward to dinner and a lunchtime breakfast burrito or a heaping helping of huevos rancheros robs me of that. People who normally like to drink during the day love brunch because they can drink and not hide it. With brunch, they don't have to be embarrassed about being soused in the middle of the afternoon. The last time I hosted brunch was New Year's Day a number of years ago. I only agreed to have it because it was a request. I didn't call it brunch because I don't like the term. Because brunches at home tend to be buffet style, it's a great opportunity to be brave and serve a dish you have never made before. That way, you can mix it amongst the more common dishes and take note of its reception. When using a large table to display your brunch buffet, it's fun to go crazy with the food decorations, like butter molds and radish carvings, or create pickle fans and celery curls. Brunch is also a good time to serve exotic teas. Because brunch is a daytime activity, people feel comfortable bringing their children. My brunch was no exception. Fortunately, I was able to turn this unfortunate facet of brunch into a money-making opportunity because, after all, who doesn't want a photo of their child taken on the first day of the year, especially when it costs only peanuts? And now for one of my self-award-winning recipes. Pastizio, meat pie. Preheat oven to 350 degrees. This dish will cook for 45 minutes. For the macaroni, 1 16-ounce package of ziti macaroni. It has to be ziti. 5 tablespoons of butter. 3/4 cup of Parmesan cheese or cavolfiore cheese. 1/4 teaspoon of nutmeg. Salt and pepper. 3 eggs lightly beaten. For the meat sauce, you need 1.5 pounds of beef, 1 onion chopped, 1 crushed garlic clove, 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 small can tomato paste, 1/2 cup of red wine, 1/2 can of beef broth or stock, 2 tablespoons chopped parsley, 1/2 teaspoon sugar, salt, and pepper. For the cream sauce, 1/3 cup of butter, 1/2 cup of flour, 3 cups of milk, 1/4 teaspoon nutmeg, salt and pepper, 1 egg. In a large pot, boil and drain your ziti, return to pot. Melt butter, pour over the ziti and toss. Add 1/2 cup of the cheese, the nutmeg, salt and pepper. Save a little of the cheese to sprinkle over the top of the dish before baking. Toss again and set aside. Let it cool a little before adding the eggs. Toss well. To make the meat sauce, brown meat in frying pan until almost fully cooked. Drain off the fat and set the meat aside. Fry onion and garlic in oil. Add meat and remaining ingredients. Cover and simmer for 20 minutes. To make the cream sauce, melt the butter in a saucepan. Stir in flour and cook until smooth. Add milk all at once and bring to a boil, stirring constantly. Add nutmeg, salt, and pepper. Let it cool, then stir in the beaten egg. Add 1/2 cup of this cream sauce to the meat sauce and mix. To assemble, use a 13x9x3-inch oven dish, buttered. Spoon 1/2 of the macaroni evenly on the bottom, then top with the meat sauce. Cover that layer with remaining macaroni. Pour on cream sauce and spread over the entire top. Sprinkle on remaining cheese and bake until a little brown on top for about 45 minutes. Another one of my self-award-winning recipes. Spanakopita, spinach pie. 5 eggs, 3 10-ounce packages of frozen chopped spinach, defrosted, wring out any water using cheesecloth or dish rag, 8 ounces of cream cheese, 8 ounces or more of crumbled feta cheese, 8 ounces of small curd cottage cheese, olive oil, 2 bunches of chopped green onions, sauteed, 1 tablespoon of parsley, dill, fennel, optional, 3 tablespoons of Parmesan cheese, 1 1-pound box of phyllo pastry sheets. In a mixer, beat the eggs until fluffy. Add everything else except the phyllo, gradually, just until mixed. You can store the filling in the fridge to make the next day, if desired. Or you can make the whole pie, freeze it, and bake it the next day. Melt a stick of butter. Using a pastry brush, butter the pan you will be using to bake it in. I use a 9x13x3-inch pan. Line the bottom with 1/2 the box of phyllo, buttering between each layer. Add spinach filling, spread evenly, top with a little extra crumbled feta, if you have some left. Place the remaining phyllo on top. Again, butter between each sheet. I pre-cut the spanakopita and place it in the freezer until ready to bake. I then baptize the top with a little water and bake at 350 degrees until golden brown and crispy on top for about 45 to 50 minutes. If phyllo starts to get too brown, cover with foil. Cooking under the influence. I like drugs. And when I say drugs, of course I mean helpful pills that are legally prescribed by doctors. Why would I partake in the use of illegal substances? I firmly believe that illegal drugs are destroying the moral fiber of this nation, and I would be willing to repeat this statement in any court of law where I am on trial. Now, if the prosecution asserts that illegal substances, such as marijuana, are as common at my parties as punch or appetizers, well, all I have to say to that ridiculous accusation is, Judge, I rest me's case. I never have drugs at my parties. I do occasionally have what I like to refer to as party enhancers. There are all sorts of party enhancers, and often the differences in symptoms can be subtle. As a safety measure, it is often helpful to be able to identify the specific enhancer your guest is flying on. A guide to help you keep track. 1. Dilated pupils. They seem wired, tense, jittery, or wound as tight as a spring. Their hands and feet are in constant motion. They threaten another guest with a pork chop bone. This would indicate goofballs. 2. Pupils are contracted. The person is apathetic. Their movements are slow and relaxed. They seem out of this world. They nod out in the eggnog. This would suggest zombies. 3. Bloodshot and slightly glazed eyes. Binge eating followed by bouts of passivity. They attempt to describe all their ideas. Say hello to pot. Alcoholics. If one of my parties was pulled over and administered a breath analyzer, it would spend the weekend in jail. That's because at my parties, alcohol and drugs are encouraged, in moderation. And by moderation, I of course mean that whatever my guests want to put in their throats is fine with me. I'm not here to judge. That's not to say I'm eager to entertain alcoholics. Even though some of my friends, as well as most of the guys I've dated, are alcoholics, I'm not a big fan of drunks at my parties. On first thought, they might seem like the perfect party guest, lively, spirited, unpredictable, and they can be until the time of the night comes when they're throwing up in your dishwasher. As much as an alcoholic can rev up a party, they can kill one just as fast. Yes, it's kind of amusing when they make that beard out of cheese, but the laughs die quickly once you realize you now have nothing to dip your crackers in. And that's the problem with alcoholics at parties. They don't have any boundaries. That, and they'll drink all your liquor, crash in your bed, and wet it. Alcoholics tend to think they are much funnier than they actually are, and this is a major pitfall for the alcoholic. Most people know when they've lost their audience, but not the alcoholic. They'll keep plugging away long after the house lights have come up. If you decide on having an alcoholic at your party, make sure it's a large gathering. This way, until the alcoholic begins removing their clothes or dangling the cat out the window, they can sort of blend in. An alcoholic at a small gathering is called an intervention. Also, alcoholics are no fun to cook for. They are not interested in food. Alcoholics like to drink. When alcoholics cook for themselves, they only think in terms of what they can do minimally and still sustain life. On the other hand, a party won't fare any better with recovered alcoholics. They love to regale party guests with their ribald stories of their drinking days, which always makes me think, I bet you were a lot more fun when you drank. Extra, extra! Interesting information. If you were purchasing hash and you notice it's been rolled really tight, chances are that children rolled it. Maybe this will make you think twice about buying it. When you hear someone use the word meds instead of the word medicine, chances are they're no stranger to massive doses of mind-altering psychotropic drugs. Back out of the room slowly. If you know you are going to be drinking or doing drugs, make sure to first organize your wallet so you don't accidentally pay the cabbie too much money. Young boys start drinking at an early age when feelings and emotions develop and they yearn to suppress them. This explains why so many adult men are crisis-prone and emotionally blocked. This can also apply to some women. You know who you are. And now for one of my self-award-winning recipes. An alcoholic's menu. Whiskey Dick's baked chicken wings, applesauce. Put chicken wings in a pan with some oil. Add salt and pepper now, or whatever you're sober enough to reach for, so you don't forget later. Bake at 375 degrees for about an hour. Turn oven off. Here's my suggestion. Odd numbers of food look better on a plate. 5 chicken wings are going to look better than 4. Bats in the belfry. As a host, you will have to accept early on in the party process that some or many of your guests will have psychological problems and that these need to be considered. For instance, one of your guests may be unable to remove himself from a physically abusive relationship. You need to be sensitive to this and avoid menu items such as battered chicken, whipped potatoes, beets, or sockeye salmon. If another guest is in a codependent relationship, they might feel more comfortable being served peas and carrots, turkey and stuffing, fish and chips, linguine and clams, or pork and beans. You might not be aware of a guest's mental disorder beforehand, only to find it flaring up just as the party kicks in. Remember, this is your party, not a sanatorium. Your healthy party guest must come first. If the troubled guest cannot be talked down, ask him or her to leave. If the troubled guest refuses to leave, sedate him. If sedating him flops, coax him into a closet by either preying on his paranoid fantasies or with a chicken wing. Once the guest is trapped, block the door with furniture and call a professional. The stain box. There is much one can do to remove a urine stain from a mattress. Vinegar can remove odors, but because this is a moisture problem, I suggest dragging your mattress out into the sun. But realize you're not only airing a mattress, you're airing your dirty laundry as well. Munchies! Baked tater tots topped with cheddar cheese and bacon. Mozzarella sticks dipped in Cool Whip. Take the chewed up cracker that is in your mouth and top it on another cracker and eat it. Peanut butter sandwich with grapes, bananas, and honey on toasted bread. Cold peanuts with milk. Toasted frozen waffles with ice cream between them. A glass of milk with 4 milk duds at the bottom. Popcorn popped in bacon grease. Banana with peanut butter on it. Coconut and peanut butter mixed together. Block of cheddar cheese with mayonnaise on it. Grilled cheese and corn sandwich. Powdered sugar on any kind of cheese. Banana dipped in Jell-O powder. Potato chips dipped in ketchup or mustard or salad dressing. Stovetop s'mores. Crushed pretzels with cream cheese on toast. Uncooked hot dog dipped in Swiss Miss. Turkey sandwich with Doritos crushed inside. Pretzels dipped in peanut butter. Grape jelly with chocolate sauce. Cake mix milkshake made with water. Crisco mixed with sugar. Kool-Aid mixed with pickle spears. Fudgesicle. Children. As far as I'm concerned, children's parties don't really matter until the children are at least 5. This is the age that gifts count. Children before that age are too young to understand the concept of presents. You can gift wrap a head of cabbage and give it to a 2-year-old and they won't know the difference. I once gave a toddler a string of old colored light bulbs and his reaction was no different from when he opened the blocks or stuffed turtle. Of course, I say that gifts don't matter to children under 5, but this is coming from a person who has given a hand-tailored cape to a rabbit. But that's different. Rabbits know. When planning a child's party, send invitations out because children love to get mail. Explain what activities are planned so the children know what to wear, pool party or hayride. Children's parties should always have a set time limit, like 2 to 2:30. Because given a child's boundless energy and the lack of yours, you will never wear them down. The more organized the party, the better, because you don't want the kids to get bored or restless. Organizing a child's party is also a great time for your own child to begin learning how to be a good host or hostess. Make sure they greet and say bye to everyone and send thank you notes, even if they just say, thanks. Surprise parties are completely wasted on young children, because they take away all the excitement building up to the date as well as the fun of planning. If you have a backyard, take advantage of it. Sprinkler well, because kids need lots of game room and running space. If you have a children's party in your home, be sure you put away anything you don't want broken or chewed or scratched or ripped or tortured or burned or drawn on or peed on or spit up on, permanently stained or tangled or stabbed. If you are incapable of managing more than 2 children, either have a grown-up friend help you or pay some teenagers to help. I decorate for birthday parties the same way I did growing up, with crepe paper streamers coming from each corner of the room. It doesn't matter what age group will be attending, streamers always scream party. Use sturdy paper plates and cups. They are the safest bet around children. They are colorful and easy to clean up. The menu should be simple and fun. Add faces to hamburger buns or cookie ears to ice cream scoops so the food appears as if it could come alive. If you are feeling really generous, you can make what the birthday boy or girl requests. My brother David always had my mother make him duck for his birthday, but he made the rest of us eat Spanish rice, so we would envy him. I always asked my mother to make baked Alaska on my birthday. And now for one of my self-award-winning recipes. The best root beer float in town. Take 2 scoops of vanilla ice cream and put them in your favorite glass. Pour as much root beer as you can on top. Serve with a straw and a spoon. Children's games. You've got 15 to 20 children in your home and they're getting restless. By God, you better have some activities planned or they're gonna start making up their own games like rub doo-doo on the couch or doo-doo in the fish tank. Here is a list of children's games that are sure to entertain even the most stubborn children. General party game safety. If for any reason a child's clothing catches fire, prevent the child from running because this adds oxygen, causing him to burn more quickly. Roll the smoldering child on the ground or in a rug. If a youngster breaks through the ice, have him kick his feet and wriggle to a solid surface. Kerosene is an accelerant. Try not to mix it with an open flame unless an escape route is cleared. Stay in a single file. Don't scratch and never put that in your mouth. The eyes are the most vulnerable part of the wolf. When cornered, jab something pointy into this area. And now for some of my self-award-winning children's games. The memory game. Out of the children's view, place about 20 items on a table and cover them with a blanket. Now, divide the children into two teams. In the presence of both teams, uncover the items for 1 minute and then cover them again. Now, send the teams off to separate rooms. Adults should act as a secretary. Have the kids try to name as many of the objects as they can remember. Whichever team remembers the most wins. Memory game 2. Have the children sit in a room together. Ask a neighbor to enter the room and let the kids take a good look without informing the kids that they will later be asked to describe him. Now, after about 3 minutes, tell your neighbor to leave and have the kids attempt to remember details about your neighbor. Not only is this fun and helpful for honing detective skills, but if your neighbor does become involved in anything unsavory, you now have 20 youthful witnesses who can describe him. Play grown-up. Have a cocktail party. Make fake liquor using food coloring. For example, use yellow for scotch, green for creme de menthe. Pretend French fries with the tips dipped in ketchup are lit cigarettes. Have the children simulate spousal abuse by arguing, and as this escalates, slapping each other. Use Tic Tacs to spit out of the mouth as if they were teeth. Use red Tic Tacs if you want to pretend they are bloody teeth. If there is an infant in the house, it's always fun to play social services. Have one child pretend he is going to take the baby away from another child. The pretend mother can fight for custody. You can always substitute a real baby with a fake baby by wrapping something baby-like in a towel. Have a child pretend he is walking in on his wife and catching her having an affair with another person. Gypsy. Blindfold all the children and then drive them across town. Drop them off at a place they have never been to before. Remove their blindfolds and drive away. Their goal is to make it back home. Junior astronomer. Have the children lie in the neighbor's driveway and look up at the stars. Junior UN ambassador. Teach the kids how to say hello in different languages. Junior cat burglar. Lock the kids out of the house and see if they can break in. Junior vacuum salesman. Have the children take turns dumping things on the floor and then demonstrating how they would clean it up. Train robbery. Make a pretend train car by setting up chairs in a line. Now have some of the children act as train passengers. Have the rest of the children pretend they are Indians and rob the passengers. If one of the passengers is a blonde girl, encourage the Indians to kidnap her in hopes of making her their savage bride. Busking. Drive the party to the airport and have them entertain travelers for small change. Hillbilly hijinks. Toss a greased watermelon into the pool and have all the kids try to grab for it. If you don't have a pool, use a tub. POW. Confine some of the children and give them a secret. Now have some of the other children escort the confined children one by one into another room. Once secured, the guard children will attempt to get the prisoner children to tell their secrets through forceful means. Wiggle worm. Have the children take turns being a worm. One child gets in bed, another makes the sound of a phone ringing. Then they try to make it to the phone to answer it by dragging themselves across the room. The goal is to make it to the phone before it stops ringing. A variation on this theme is to pretend someone is breaking in and the child playing the worm has to make it to the phone in time to call for help. Wishing well. Make your friends use their pocket change. Turn your bathtub into a wishing well and let them try to earn all their money back. Beauty parlor. Do each other's makeup and hair and talk about your problems. Beauty contest. Pick up some old clothes, bathing suits, hats, and jewelry from a thrift store. Create a catwalk and have all the children dress up and play beauty contest. Videotape it and critique each other afterwards. Make a winning sash out of toilet paper. I want to see. Blindfold someone and do some sort of activity in the room. Unblindfold him and see if they can guess what you did. The greasy bag game. Pass a greasy bag around and act out different scenarios. This is especially good for all ages. Dr. Fleischacker, don't forget your lunch! Several of the games listed here are also fun for children with a disability or handicap. No need to eliminate these children from your party guest list. If they are blind, invite them to your house a day early to familiarize themselves with the layout of your house. If they are deaf, use bright, vibrant colors and play games that aren't hard to explain. You might want to invite another child with the same misfortune so they don't feel so alone. I would imagine planning activities would be challenging, but in a fun way. My suggestion box. Organize coloring books and crayons using your dish drainer. If you place a tight rubber band around a glass, your child will be able to hold onto it better, and this will eliminate drink spills. The more colorful clothes your child wears, the easier for you to find them in a crowd. Buy a book on stain removals. Montgomery's Disguise Kit.
Hello to you! My name is Montgomery, and I am a worm of many disguises. Sometimes I find myself in a tough situation that I need to wiggle out of. Whether it's avoiding being dangled from the end of a fishing pole or being dropped in the bottom of a tequila bottle, I do a lot of squirming around. That's why I have put together my disguise kit. Because a lot of times, it's safer not to be me. Now get a wiggle on!
This kit includes bald cap, icky teeth, Coke bottle glasses, mustache, eyebrows, mole with hair, eye patch, nicotine stain, rubber cement for scars, scabs, cork and matches for hobo, fingernails, yellow paint for oriental, red paint for Indian chief, chapstick. If you suck the lid onto your upper lip, it looks like you have a buck tooth. Also includes steel wool for a beard, vacuum cleaner hose to make antennas, and charcoal tablets to give the illusion you don't have a tooth in your head.
Like me, Montgomery!